Hey, sports fans, it's world champion Andy Gepper, Mike North. Punch this number in your phone right now. If you're driving, pull over. 1-800-808-3419. 1-800-808-3419 for a free pick and info for the premier handicapping site in the country, Vegas Scores and Odds.com. It's the only site you'll ever need with expert handicappers like John Anthony, Denny Macklin, Tony Sacco, Ray Monahan, yours truly, and many more. Check out the homepage of Vegas Scores and Odds.com for a tote board with your buddy. Follow Vegas Scores and Odds on Twitter and dial up 1-800-808-3419. It's 1-800-808-3419, 1-800-808-3419, or go to VegasScoresandOdds.com.
The following program is suitable for all ages.
Buffoon. A certain magic will always linger with the very name. It speaks of courage and fervor in the world's most brutal game. 55, worn by Doug Buffon, a Chicago Bear through and through. He demanded excellence of himself and anyone wearing navy blue.
You tell me what's going on. This is moronic. We're going to get our ass whipped all the way down the line. I want somebody to get kicked in the ass. And get out there and play. You're getting paid to play this game. I'm playing right. I don't mind you getting beat. I got my ass whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me. You are a professional team. Act like one, for God's sakes.
Football fans, this is Buffon 55. The John Buffon Show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Buffon 55, a fast-paced approach to Chicago Bears football analysis. I'm your host, John Buffon. I'm coming to you live Tuesday night, November 26th, over our Bears Barroom Radio Network Mixler.com channel. Every week, we provide you an in-depth analysis of the Bears' upcoming opponent. Here to help us break down the Detroit Lions this week is Chris Perfett, the adequate host of the Pride of Detroit podcast. That's his own self-title there. Chris is going to join us in just a little bit. First, I want to welcome the old bag of bones, the battle axe, the trusty producer, Aldo Gandia. Aldo, how you doing?
I am doing well, and I am very lucky that we are getting the opportunity to talk about a Bears win, as distasteful as it was, because it was a bitter feeling after the final gun went off against the Giants.
Yeah. How did you feel? Did you feel like relief, or did you feel indifferent? Did you feel like, okay, whatever?
Listen, you know, anytime you win an NFL football game, you shouldn't be too down, because winning NFL games it's a difficult thing. We know that, and so we should be happy. But this team has just so disappointed us this year, and we saw, you know, so many of the imperfections and defects with this team. And I know you're going to share your thoughts about it coming up, but it was just not a good feeling. What was your overall feeling?
I mean, I know I should feel good, and I'm not trying to take anything away from that, but it was probably one of the least rewarding wins I've ever seen, to be honest with you. It didn't have the juice that I hoped it would.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, before we bring in our guest, let me just remind people how the show works. We begin and end the show with five questions for you, John, and you have 55 seconds to respond to that. Those each question, and that is, of course, your way of dedicating Buffon 55 to Doug Buffon, your uncle, who played 15 seasons for the Chicago Bears and wore number 55. John, you want to get the first five in the books?
Hey, let's do it.
All right. Mitch Trubisky passed for a season-high 278 yards and a touchdown pass to Allen Robinson, but he threw two interceptions, one of them in the end zone on a weird play that had two Bears right receivers nearly rubbing shoulders with one another, and then a second interception on a terribly underthrown bomb down the middle of the field. Those are the highs and lows of Mitch Trubisky's performance. Now, in the next 55 seconds, why don't you kind of fill in the middle with your take on his performance? Ready, set, and go.
Season high, 278 yards. Doesn't that sound pathetic? Look, he hit some guys in stride. He was able to hit some guys when they were open. It was okay. But right from the get-go, on the first drive, we saw him basically predetermine where he was going to throw the ball when he didn't hit a wide-open Ben Broniker for the first down and just force something to Allen Robinson. This is what he does. I don't think that's ever going to change. You figure out which route you like, and that's where the ball's going no matter what. He still isn't processing things or going through the progressions. This is what he is. I will say he had another game where receivers were dropping some passes. The Broniker throw where he would have waltzed right into the end zone, that kind of pops into my mind. But when it comes down to it, they scored 19 points on a bad defense, and he still got picked off twice. I don't put a lot of stock in seeing someone progress against bad competition. You don't get better when you aren't challenged. All I saw was a barely survivable performance against a bad team. So I implore you not to dust off the Trubisky Pro Bowl jersey. This wasn't a great performance. It was enough to beat the 2-9 Giants.
Yeah, you know, that team, that Giants team is bad. Oh, my goodness, right. Are they bad. I mean, a great running back like Saquon Barkley, you know, looks like an average running back at best behind that awful offensive line that they have over there. And I'm not sure that that head coach for the Giants is any good at scheming plays to get Barkley going. So that's a terrible team. And for us to walk away with that type of victory against that kind of team is it's just
they survived. Awful. They survived. They didn't win. They survived.
You got it. Now, a total of 68 rushing yards on 26 attempts. And then I looked at this. Tariq Cohen and David Montgomery, each of them had 13-yard runs. And then Trubisky had a 12-yarder. You take away those three runs, and the Bears rushed 23 times for 27 yards. John, what happened to the Bears' rushing game on Sunday? You got 55 seconds. Run with it.
Well, they really didn't use it much. Montgomery led the team with 13 carries, and Cohen had 6. I don't think most of Trubisky's runs were designed, since you know he's got a hip injury. So that tells me that they had 19 designed run plays, and they averaged about 2.5 yards on those carries. Look, I'm a David Montgomery truther. I think he has a lot of talent. I think the offensive line is getting blown up, and they basically aren't doing anything right. Once again, this is all going to get a reprieve from harsh criticism because they were able to eke out a win against a 2-9 opponent. Defenses don't respect the offensive line. They don't respect the quarterback either, but we're talking about the run game right now. But they get pushed around from Coward to Leonard to Cornelius Lucas. Now, I'm sure a lot of Bears fans saw this before the game. Bobby Massey's Twitter account, which apparently is not run by him, tweeted out, quote, "New Sunday, no opportunity, let's go." Now, look, mistakes happen on Twitter. I don't hold that against anybody, especially when you can't edit tweets. But, man, does that not epitomize the 2019 Bears? New Sunday, no opportunity. That's how it feels.
That is crazy. Maybe it's the painkillers he's taking for that injured ankle he's got. I don't know. That's weird.
Well, apparently he doesn't run his own Twitter account. It was eventually fixed, but it was up there for a long time. Even when the game was going on, it was like, new Sunday, no opportunity. You're like, yeah, you're probably right.
Perhaps he's sharing those painkillers with his people over there. All right, John. Over at Bears Wire, Alyssa wrote about the return of Khalil Mack. Not that he really went anywhere, right? But he was back in the stat sheet after registering 0 tackles and 0 sacks last Sunday against the Rams. Now, tell me what you thought of number 52's 3-tackle, 1-sack game against the Giants, and do it in 55 seconds. Ready, set, go.
Well, it was refreshing. There were flashes of what we grew accustomed to, dominating double and sometimes triple teams. But if I'm going to temper my excitement over the offense because they played the Giants, I'm going to do the same here. However, we have seen Khalil Mack dominate good competition before. This wasn't exactly a coming out parade for Khalil Mack. Hopefully this keeps that fire burning, because as we saw, the Bears will need the defense to continue holding opponents to 14 to 16 points, even when those opponents are consistently starting drives in Bears territory for one reason or another. Mack will have to regain that dominance, because without Akeem Hicks, without Trevathan, this is still a solid unit. But being solid isn't good enough. People have some misguided angst towards the defense, but if you are holding teams to 17 points, you should be a winning team. The Bears are 4th in points allowed. It goes New England, San Francisco, Buffalo, Chicago, and then Baltimore to round out the top 5. You want to know what those teams outside of the Bears have in common? They're going to make the playoffs, and most of them are going to win their division.
That is a very depressing stat there. I didn't know they were that high up in the standings. Man, oh man. I'm just at a loss for words with what this team has been going through and putting us through. I mean, that's the most disappointing thing, is the high expectations, and here we are looking at another season without a playoff.
Well, what's unfair about that is that the people are saying that the defense is doing this. The defense, they're taking a lot of pot shots going at the defense.
Yeah.
No defense is going to play 100% perfect 100% of the time. And so it's so easy to nitpick the defense, because if they give up a drive that ends up being the difference, all of a sudden it's the defense's fault, despite the fact the offense can't even pick up a first down, let alone score. So everyone's saying, oh, the defense is giving up yards, giving up big drives. What the hell is the offense doing?
Yep.
So it's easy to nitpick on the other side of the ball, but let's focus on where the problem's at.
You're absolutely right. All right, question number four of our first set of 555s. The Bears had several miscues Sunday. For instance, center Cody Whitehair has a hands-to-the-face penalty, which wiped out a season-long 61-yard completion to Allen Robinson. A special teams unit committed back-to-back penalties on a two-point conversion that forced the Bears to instead try for a 48-yard point after touchdown kick, which Eddie Pinheiro missed. I could go on, but why should I ruin everybody's Thanksgiving week? How much of these miscues, John, do you think that you attribute to the coaching staff? Are the Bears coaches properly disciplining their players to help avoid these errors? 55 ticks, go.
I said this during the game. The Bears can't even allow us to enjoy a touchdown for 30 freaking seconds, man. Let's go through this. The Bears score following a takeaway and decide to go for two. Then they call a timeout. They got penalized twice on the two-point conversion and then had to attempt a 48-yard extra point, which Pinheiro missed. This is why we can't have nice things. Penalties during the play are hard to pin on the coach, although it can happen. But geez, when it's too many men in the huddle or having to take a timeout because you can't choose a play off your Denny's menu quick enough, those are coaching issues. I've said it before. Delay of games, false starts, illegal substitutions and shifts, and other pre- and post-snap stuff, those are discipline issues, and that is primarily on the coach. Can you really install a more disciplined system in week 13? Look, I know I was a casual supporter of resting guys in the preseason. In fact, Nagy kind of set the trend with this last year, but it looks like they maybe needed to maybe have a little more mental preparation in the preseason. I'm not going to completely jump over and join the dark side with Mike North, but maybe this team needed to analyze itself a little bit better in August.
Yep, I'm with you. All right, last question before we bring Chris in, and I'm really looking forward to this interview because he sounds like a great guy in the little pre-show chat that we had. All right, we focused a lot on the duds from Sunday. Now tell me who were your studs, and you got 55 seconds, and then bring Chris in. Go.
Well, my heart breaks for Allen Robinson. He'd be putting up Julio-type numbers if he were in a competent offense. He leaves Jacksonville with Blake Bortles and comes to Chicago and gets Mitchell Trubisky and the rest of this Mickey Mouse offense. He had six catches for 131 yards and a touchdown on Sunday. Had a big one called back, as we talked about. He's on track for about 94, 95 catches. He could flirt with 100 receptions this year. Can you imagine someone having 100 catches in this offense? Look, Allen Robinson picked Chicago. He could have gone somewhere else with a better offensive system, but he's here, and it's killing me that they could be wasting him. He deserves better. Hell, everyone deserves better. Robinson leads the team with 63 receptions right now. Tariq Cohen follows him with 50. The next actual receivers on that list, Taylor Gabriel and Anthony Miller, both come in with 29 catches. The guys that were supposed to be the accent pieces, the big play guys. Anthony Miller, the guy they traded up to get, 29 catches, zero touchdowns. Although he did have his best game of the year against the Giants, I'll give him that, six catches for 77 yards. It would be nice to see that continue. So I guess Allen Robinson was my stud of Sunday. Okay, I now want to welcome Chris Perfett, the host of the Pride of Detroit podcast. Chris, does our moaning and groaning sound familiar to you, given that you cover a team that is also that has lost four in a row?
I don't know what you're talking about, to be honest. I have no clue. I have no clue. It's there's nothing here. There is no, if we're being platonic about it, platonic ideals, there are no Lions right now. It's just a thing. It's a crater. It exists.
That's
in a space and time. No, I go meta. I have a master's. I kind of have to be at this point.
Oh,
I have to be the smart guy, which means that I'm also an idiot. So, I mean, it's how it works.
You think, therefore you are. You've blown my mind.
Well, there's questions as to whether then if Matt Patricia exists or not, if that's your standard, but that's for neither here nor there.
That might be for a completely different podcast. We'll get to that a little bit later, but I kind of want to just jump right into it. The Lions are going to face the Bears for the second straight Thanksgiving. While the Lions are struggling at 3-7-1, they tend to play well on Thanksgiving. They've gone 4-2 in the last 6 years. Are you expecting to see a different Lions team come Thursday, given the circumstances?
Well, they have been 4-2 in the past 6 years, as you say. But before that, it was a pretty bleak record for their Thanksgiving. I can't remember how many years in a row. It might have been close to 20 or something like that, where they just lost on Thanksgiving. It was terrible. Everyone trots out their hot takes. How dare we have the Lions on Thanksgiving? Listen, if we had scheduled Bengals Steelers, because that's an AFC North division game, and maybe the Steelers are good, you think, before the start of the year, how's that looking right now? So the Lions are what you have. I'm sorry, you don't get a say in this. It's our tradition. There's precious few of them left in this goddamn country. So I want my Lions on Thanksgiving. And I think the question of how do we think about the Lions? Again, the problem is the Lions just don't think right now. Jeff Driskel is going to be your starting quarterback. The Lions were just blocked from trying to sign Josh Johnson by the XFL, probably for their own good, because they've tried this Josh Johnson tree before and it never works. So it's probably going to be Driskel, or maybe a third stringer, maybe David Blah, or however you say his last name. We've been trying to figure it out since the start of the season how to say David Blah. So Blah. I mean, it's a Bond villain name regardless.
It really is.
So yeah, I mean, that wasn't that the head inspector? No, he's the head inspector. It was Blah.
And now he's a quarterback for the Lions.
Well, he's a quarterback for the Lions, which means that probably, like in The Dark Knight Rises, Ford Field is going to be collapsed into the earth, which is probably the most fitting way to end Lions-Bears in 2019. Listen, I don't have a lot of faith in your guys' quarterback in Trubisky. I don't have a lot of faith in Jeff Driskel. He's had a couple of nice games. He looked decent, but then he also lost and threw two interceptions to probably the second worst team in the NFL in Washington. So I've got no faith in this. I've got no faith in the defense. There's no pass rush to speak of. Maybe Marvin Jones shows up. I don't want to even predict this at this point. It's just going to be bad. It's going to be miserable. And that's how Thanksgiving Day should be.
Well, you have really raised my spirits about this game. I'm looking forward to watching it. let's talk about the Lions season in general. The guy heading the ship. The Lions have lost 7 of the last 8 games. Is Matt Patricia's seat getting warmer and warmer with each passing week? Could this be his swan song in Detroit?
Unfortunately, I don't think that answer is yes. And I'm going to explain why that's unfortunate, because I never really bought into the idea of Patricia in the first way. First off, can we stop with this whole Patriot Way stuff? I hear it all the time. And even for the Patriots, the Patriot Way doesn't exist. So when I saw reporters start talking about bringing Patricia in, bringing general manager Bob Quinn in, who used to be one of the scouts for the New England Patriots. People started talking Patriot Way immediately. You know what it is? It's not the Patriot Way. It's the Boston boys. Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia up there are the Boston boys, just yucking it up with their baseball bats and their beards and their slovenliness, just not... I don't know what they do, man. But the reason why Patricia's probably not going to be gone after this year, unless he like really torches something, is because Bob Quinn is the general manager in that front office. He's the one who was kind of setting the table for Patricia for a couple years before Patricia got here. You know, he kept Caldwell for, I think, a season or two or a season and a half whenever they brought Bob Quinn in. I kind of forget at this point. So they were setting the table. They were trying to draft guys who would fit this. Now they've been rolling back that narrative and saying, oh, we weren't really drafting guys for Patricia before Patricia got here. It's like, great. So then what was the point? Whatever. Right. I don't. It's not like Bob Quinn has been hitting on draft picks, but I would say that the thing is that unless Martha Ford comes down and makes Quinn choose between his job and Matt Patricia's, then probably Quinn is not going to fire Matt Patricia, because again, these guys are the Boston boys. They're in tight. This was kind of the plan. And I've already seen the reasonable football knowers come out in droves talking about, well, you need to give a coach 3 years. Well, we need to see what their plan is. Well, there's a lot of injuries. Be reasonable. You're near the end of Stafford's, you know, prime. You got to be reasonable about this. I think the end of Stafford's prime is a reason why you do it right now, man. You got to go fast on this because it's all going to fall apart. I mean, maybe the problem is that people then say, and I have to agree with this, like, well, then maybe you might have to trade Stafford. You might have to. Like, the problem is that when Patricia came in, it came in with this very weird notion that we can only have guys in who buy into our system. So you've seen a lot of guys with talent leave Detroit, especially this past year, who've gone on to have great talent elsewhere, and you just kind of shrug and say, did they just not know how to use him here? Like, I just saw the PFF grades from the Seahawks game, both Ezekiel Ansah and Quandre Diggs. Quandre Diggs traded in the middle of, like, the season for a fifth rounder, man. Just suddenly, no value whatsoever. He's like their top graded guy out there. They needed the safety help in the Seahawks, and the Lions have nothing. They don't have anything. This is supposed to be the defensive genius, and he refuses to draft a pass rusher. He thinks you can play zone and you know, really lean on your secondary while also stripping pieces away from your secondary and alienating Darius Slay. He thinks you can run a ground you can get a run game going with no real talent at running back and no offensive line to speak of, which once again means Stafford is your lifeblood. And hey, is Stafford playing on Thanksgiving? No. So, like, that's where we're at. I don't like Patricia. I thought it was a bad idea from the get-go when the news came out that he was indicted in the 90s by a grand jury for sexual assault in South Texas. I thought this was probably the right time to let him go to save face. Lions like having this progressive face towards the city and towards the league in general. And they just stood by this guy as he just doubled down and blustered. And this is what we have now. We have a guy who dresses like a garbage bag telling reporters to sit up straight in press conferences, who can't decide if he wants to throw the defensive coordinator Paul Pasqualoni fully under the bus or only partway under the bus, so just mauls and maims him. I don't understand the need to stick with this coaching staff. I don't. Like, there's a realistic reason to stick with the coaching staff because you got to give him 3 years. Who knows? Maybe he turns it around. Data isn't great, though. Historically, a lot of coaches don't, with this kind of record, don't turn around in year three. But I don't want reasonable anymore. Reasonable hasn't gotten the Lions anywhere. And I feel like, as someone who considers myself an observer of the Lions at this point, as someone who likes to poke the thing and say, hey, let's just have some fun with this, I want to see them do something wild. And unfortunately, Patricia's not wild. Patricia thinks he's coaching for the Bears circa 1985.
Huh. Well, he's far from that. In fact, the Bears are far from that as well. You talked about Stafford being the lifeblood of the team. Obviously, he won't be there or on the field on Thursday. If just Driscoll is indeed good enough to go against the Bears, he'll probably be hampered a little bit by that hamstring injury. What is Driscoll doing well? What is he doing bad? What can you tell us a little bit more? Because, I mean, the Bears saw him in his first start. Has he gotten any better since then?
Yeah, I do want to correct, because now I'm thinking, like, I might have called it zone for whatever they play. I don't know what the right word is, because I used contain a while back, and then people yelled at me. This is why I'm the adequate host, because just terms in football confuse me, man.
You're fully better than adequate so far.
Like, listen, like, the terms in football confuse me, and that's why a lot of people, if you're, like, really good as trying to read tape, guess what? You're not getting jobs in this business anyway, because you're still going to make mistakes. Like, my favorite videos is watching beat reporters try to question a coach about why do you play a certain scheme out there, and they just say, we didn't play that at all. Yeah, because this is completely unknowable. But I'm sorry. Back to your question about Driscoll. I'm sorry.
No, you go. No, I love this. Let's go off track.
I
want to hear all. I want to hear everything you got to say about Jeff Driscoll.
Jeff Driscoll, man. I used to run a college football podcast way back, and the imprint of this guy playing in Florida is still etched into my mind so thoroughly. So it's really hard for me to be unbiased about Driscoll. But I mean, what can I say? He's decent with the ball. He seems to put a little more juice on it. It's one of my favorite words, juice. But he still has the happy feet. He still can't set his feet down. He's what you want out of a backup in a couple of games where, you know, I would have thought this kid's like a rookie or something. You know, the way people are talking about it, he's been bouncing around the league for about four seasons now. So I don't understand the fascination with him, but he's playing as a backup. He's playing as a backup, and the Lions haven't really had to. Here's the thing, trivia time, just to see how much Bears fans are up on the Lions history. Do you know who the last quarterback who wasn't Matt Stafford to play in a Lions game was to start a game, I should say?
Sounds like an Orlovsky question, but I have no idea.
No, it's not Orlovsky. It's I'm pretty sure it's Sean Hill. I could be wrong. I, I have those to
guys,
verify.
Those guys are interchangeable for me, I guess.
Yeah. So Sean Hill started in 2010 when Stafford was injured. That's how long we're talking, though, is nine years, 10 seasons.
So this since, is new. It's all new, yeah, having somebody.
It's all very new. You know, we've seen a little bit from Orlovsky in the past. We've seen vaunted Keith, Kellen Moore. Kellen Moore, who's now the offensive genius in Cowboys land. Yep. Going back home to be the savior that people always thought he was going to be. It's been, you know, the Bi Felicia kid from Miami, whose name escapes me. It's been Jake Rudock, which all the Michigan people got really excited about. There's been so many, but no one's really started. No one's had to go out there at the start of the game and call heads or tails. And now it's Jeff Driscoll. So this is new territory. He does not spread the ball around probably as well as Stafford does. You can see it. He kind of leans a little more, I feel, on Marvin Jones, which is not a bad place to really lean. Although Danny Amendola has been getting quite a few catches. The Lions are really trying to make sure he gets it out faster, which is probably for the best. But he's not Stafford. And at the end of the day, that's all that's going to matter. Like I know a lot of people bag on Stafford. A lot of people like to bag on Stafford. One of my mentors is Rob Parker. He always likes to call him Pad Statford. But Stafford is legitimately a reason why this team has kind of hung around. They've got some good wide receivers, but the value of a Kenny Galladay or a Marvin Jones Jr. or even a Danny Amendola drops significantly without Stafford making those tight spirals to them. And maybe the Lions have found something in Bo Scarborough on the ground. He almost hit 100 yards, but you don't have a ground game. And that was 100 yards, I should say, again, against Washington, which, like, 31st in defensive DVOA as of a week ago.
So let's talk about the way that the depth chart has been kind of attacked for the Lions. Now, as a team that probably didn't have Super Bowl aspirations going into this, the injury bug makes it that much worse. How much have injuries impacted this Lions roster throughout 2019?
I think when Pro Football Focus comes out with their, like, that they have that metric each year's games lost due to injuries, the Lions are going to be pretty much close to the top of that list, I would imagine. They've had Slay out for stretches of time. Losing Stafford is a massive blow. Losing Kerryon Johnson on the ground takes away. He was going to be your starting running back for the season. So immediately the offense has been completely hobbled. And on defense, like, the defense is playing really banged up too. You're starting to see some guys pick up, but at the same time, I think there's been so much turnover on the defensive line for guys who you expected to be starters who just aren't playing right now or are playing very limited. Just all around this team gets a little hurt. And I think also that's going to become, as we move into the offseason, part of the narrative on why you keep Patricia, because people are going to say, well, he had to have a team with a lot of injuries. Okay, cool. So do all these other teams in the league. It's a bad rap, but you've been preaching depth for so long, and there's no depth here. So I'm sorry.
No, that's good. That's music to Bears fans' ears. Now I want to talk about something that Bears fans love talking about: the opposing offensive line, because they always want to see if they can get to the quarterback. They want to see if they can get to Jeff Driscoll this week because he could be a little immobile. How has the Lions' offensive line fared since Driscoll took over, and has there been any kind of progress or regression?
Well, I wish I had known this question before coming in, because I'm going to admit, offensive lines is like my least favorite position to talk in all of football. There are so many offensive linemen who move into the sports media that I should probably be careful about even saying such a thing, because people will be like, first off, how dare you? Like, I'll get into work and, like, Jeff Schwartz will pop out of the Comrex and be like, heard you was talking bleep. So I've got to be careful. I've got to really be careful now all of a sudden. But it's whatever. I mean, I see that. I know we were writing about it earlier that Taylor Decker is having a quiet dominance November, which I feel like we say about a lot of Lions guys right before they crap the bed. They've been decent. Like, listen, again, Bo Scarborough got 100, almost 100 yards on the ground. They keep it stable. But Jeff Driscoll also got sacked 6 times against Washington. Like, I have to keep coming back to this, because Washington is one of the worst teams in the league. They really are. Like, and it doesn't even take that much to look at other games and be like, okay, yeah, then it's not going to fare much better. Now, granted, the Lions did keep it close against Chicago last time they visited. So I don't believe Driscoll only got sacked twice in that game, I believe. So the offensive line does its homework against the Bears. So I think it'll be a little less productive than I think Bears fans will hope. You're not going to be eating him alive, but you'll keep him honest. And then it's just a matter of if that makes him cause him to make mistakes.
Let's go on the other side of the ball. The Bears played just well enough to eke a win out against the Giants. Now they get another defense that hasn't exactly been on top of the statistic charts this year as the Lions. What are some of the holes and strengths of this Lions defense as a whole?
Strengths about the Lions defense as a whole. I mean, I'd love to say it's still the secondary. It's not been playing that well to begin with. You know, Darius Slay, I still believe, is one of the top corners in this league just from, you know, matching him pound for pound against other guys. And it kind of stops there. It really does. Like, I mean, the defensive line, I like to say their strength has been containing the run. They haven't had a lot of chances to really prove that that's their strength. But, I mean, they seem to do decently for it. I know last time the Bears and Lions met, they held Montgomery to, I think, only 60 yards on 17 carries. So there's that, but I don't trust the linebacker core. It might be one of the worst parts of the system. Losing Quandre Diggs has kind of made the safeties feel pretty weak. I don't know what really to do with it, to be honest. Like, I look at Darius Slay and I'm like, all right, he will shut down someone. He will shut down Allen Robinson. He will shut down whoever you want to say is your big receiving threat. He can do that. But after that, like, I have to shrug because the Lions seem to have this game plan of, we don't really need edge rushing. We just need to make sure that the guy throws the football without going too deep. And that's not a way to win in 2019. I'm sorry. Especially not with this linebacker core. Especially when the linebacker core is also being asked to pass rush too. And Jared Davis might be on his way to being not great.
Well, we talked about the offense. We talked about the defense. We kind of get a kick on this show talking some special teams. It's a Bears podcast, so you know we got to throw special teams in there somewhere. Can you give us a standout on special teams, whether it's a kicker, a returner, a gunner, long snapper? Is there anybody worth noting on the Lions special team unit that the Bears should keep an eye on?
Can I give you the slappy answer and then also give you the realistic answer?
I would love both of those.
Okay, the slappy answer, it's our long snapper. It is Don Muehlbach. This might be his last year. The guy's been here forever. They drafted a long snapper in like the sixth round way back in like 2015 in hopes to defeat him, and he's still here. He's still doing it. He's still great. He's fantastic. There will not be many botched snaps because he puts it on the money every time. Don Muehlbach is a veteran, and he will go down in history alongside Chris Hansen. So, I mean, Jason Hansen.
Chris Hansen, a completely different guy.
No, not Chris Hansen. Have a seat. No. Jason Hansen. This is why I'm adequate. Sometimes I have ticks. But I mean, it's hard to say anyone but Matt Prater at this point, right? I know he's not having the best year. People are shaking their fists at the fantasy score as he's only an 83% percentage on his field goal, 96%. On his extra points, but that's kind of been the case around the league. And honestly, I'm on a Bears podcast right now. So, I mean, I feel bad that I'm even bringing up kickers to you guys, yeah. But I just feel like you gotta love what you have, man.
Well, we try. We do our best on this side of the field, but it's just hard when they don't want to love us back.
Listen, now, I don't even think it's that bad. I just don't think your head coach like can get over it. He just seems to have like a psychotic break every time a kicker misses something. It's like you gotta let it go, man. Like watch Frozen with your kids every now and then, Matt.
he needs to let a lot of things go, and a lot of that starts with some of the personnel, but we can get into that later.
We got a lot more show, but first this quick message.
Aldo, How are the Barflies behaving in the chat room? They got anything for Chris?
Well, they're not at all behaving, but that's typical for the Barflies.
That's typical.
I've got three here. Chubbs82 has been very active. He had this one comment that brought to mind this question. Mitch Trubisky kind of owns the Lions. He's had his best games against the Detroit Lions, some of his best games. And that is because the Lions love to play that man-to-man defense, and Trubisky has just done a really good job against man-to-man defenses. Now, I know that's something that Matt Patricia brought with him from New England, and the Patriots are renowned for playing strictly man-to-man defense. What's your personal take, Chris, on this man-to-man defensive scheme that the Lions are running, and do you think...
The one I accidentally called zone.
That's the one. Do you think that that there should be some schematic changes in the Bears defense? I mean, excuse me, the Lions defense?
Well, first off, I want to call out Chubbs82 because he said here, I also want to, because I'm reading chat too. I see what you guys are up to. He says, man, that's a whole problem with media. You can't be scared to talk the truth to these people. Listen, I've been to games before. I confront guys all the time, you know, when I was doing journalism. Unfortunately, I'm way outside Detroit right now, but I know other guys on our staff go to these games. The best guys I learn from go to these games. And I'm joking. I'm joking when I say Jeff Schwartz is, I'm terrified of Jeff Schwartz. I'm not terrified of Jeff Schwartz. He's a big teddy bear, but I've got to make jokes here, man. I'm sorry you've got no humor in your life. Now, on to man-to-man. Now, on to man-to-man, I don't know if Patricia's smart enough to make those decisions. He insists. Like, you see it, you see this all the time when it's run, run, pass for the Lions offense. Patricia insists that a square peg goes in a round hole, and you can't tell him otherwise. You say, hey, square peg in a round hole, he's like, that's the way it's supposed to be. You don't like it? Turn that square hole into a square. I mean, that round hole into a square. Do it now. I'm the boss. You know, straighten up. Tuck in your shirt. gets Cheetos in his beard. However, I will push back about Trubisky being good against literally anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think if we're, I feel like we're trying to set that bar pretty low. Yeah, maybe he has a little more. He has a little more success there if you're a nerd. But I don't let facts bother me here. I don't let feelings don't care about your facts. And when I look at Trubisky and I hear it from every other Bears guy I talk to, I know just how little people trust this guy. So maybe he'll get weak, find a quarter, and that'll like change his chi, his balance, and he'll be able to throw against man to man a little better this week. Otherwise, I'm expecting Mitch to be Mitch.
All right. Well, don't mistake better games for anything Pro Bowl level. So when we talk about Mitch Trubisky, Chubbs82 also talked about that he believes the Lions are going to get blown out on Thanksgiving, and he truly believes that Matt Patricia will be fired on Friday. Now, I did a little research, and Quinn, at the beginning of the season, back in, I think it was January 1st. Let's see here. I got the actual date somewhere. January 1st of 2018, he did say that anything less than a 9-7 season would be unacceptable. So,
I've heard that too, but I think it's, I don't think he ever said that. Like, I'd have to go find the actual quote.
I have it here. Let me read it.
Because, like, that was the thing, because I brought that quote up before to my managing editor, Jeremy Reisman, mm-hmm. who is technically the guy who runs Pride Detroit.
Sure.
And he insists to me every time, no, he never actually said that.
Okay.
And I mean, maybe, I think he was, you know what? He might have been talking context, because I think he was talking in regards to Jim Caldwell, the previous coach. By the way, the first coach to have a winning record in Detroit since, I believe, the 60s. Since, and forgive me if I start to flounder on the name here, I usually like my NFL, Joe Schmidt. The first coach since Joe Schmidt in Detroit, who coached from 67 to 72, to have a winning record. Wayne Fonts didn't have a winning record. Like, I'm just throwing that out there. But I think he was talking about Jim Caldwell. Please continue. Yeah, we'll talk about that quote.
Well, here's the quote. Ultimately, the record that we've had the last 2 years is on me. Last year, we went 9-7 and lost the playoff game. And this year, we went 9-7 and didn't get to the playoffs. So ultimately, that's my record, and I take full ownership of that. Really, the standards that I have and the Ford family has for this team are greater than that. And my goal is to go out and find the best head coach to bring us that championship. So you're right, he didn't actually say that, but those words have been haunting him since the beginning of the season. Do you think if indeed the Lions lose to the Bears on Thanksgiving Day, and that brings an at least an 8-loss season to the Lions, that Patricia's job might be in danger?
You promise that? Promise? No, I just don't see it. I really don't see it. Like, maybe there's a Black Friday, a Black Monday coming down if the Lions end three wins, end the season with only three wins. By the way, I know a lot of Lions Twitter kind of bagged on USA Today. I forget the name of the writer, but they posted a prediction of a 3-13 season for the Detroit Lions. They're on their way to that if they lose out the rest of the year, which is, I mean, it's not impossible. I think they pick up one more win somewhere. But I don't, again, the thing is that I think there's too many excuses on the table, and the general manager is too tied to Patricia being his guy. He's too tied in because these are the Boston boys. They came out of New England together. Bob Quinn knew when he got this job, he wanted Matt Patricia. I don't know if he knows how to work with anyone else, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And if he goes to work with anyone else, it'll be also out of the Boston boys barroom up in Foxborough, and it'll be someone else. But at this point, I think also the big man, Bill Belichick, is also bribing everyone he can to stay near the throne, like he's a dying Danish king in Vinland Saga. Excuse me as I go very, very nerdy there in a reference absolutely nobody will get, but I encourage you to check out Vinland Saga on Amazon. It's my Twitter profile and everything. I'm a nerd. Anyway. I just don't see it. Like, I mean, as much as I want to see it, as much as I sit here and stump to see it, all the reasonable people out there are saying that there will be a third year of Matt Patricia. And that's the Hail Mary year. That's the year where I could see a midseason firing. But as much as I think, like, I would be pleased with a off-season or a midseason firing of Patricia going into 2020. However, I will also be shocked and surprised if that happens, if that makes sense. Again, sure. I have to really stress this, that this general manager and the coach are tied to the hip. So that means you're not just replacing Bob Quinn, you're replacing the coaching staff as well. You'd have to clean house. You'd have to clean house so hard. And at this point, with this team looking to move this quickly, I don't know if they really can, if they can really justify it. I think fans will be happy for it, but I don't know. I don't know where Martha Ford's head is at. I really don't. I don't even know how checked in she is to the team. I know the whole Ford family is kind of there with her, and you know, the NFL Network can make great documentaries about, you know, old grandmas hanging out at football games all they want, but I don't know where her thoughts are on this. People really kind of popularize this idea of Martha Firestone, which is her maiden name from the Firestone family, your Firestone tires. Talk about a Detroit marriage right there between the Fords and the Firestones. They popularize this idea of Martha Firestone personally going through Allen Park, firing Martin Mayhew and the rest of the front office. Pink slip, bam, bam, bam. No, that's not going to happen again. I'm sorry. Patricia is going to get a third year unless something apocalyptic happens. And I will take out insurance for that apocalypse, so don't question me on that.
All right. Now, I'm going to tell you this last question that I have for you. My favorite Thanksgiving Day memories goes back to 1980, Bears-Lions on Thanksgiving Day. The Bears were losing 17-3. They force overtime, and on the opening kickoff of overtime, Dave Williams for the Chicago Bears runs it back 95 yards for a game-winning touchdown. That's my favorite Thanksgiving memory. What's yours?
What year was that again?
1980. Yes, I'm old.
Okay, not even in my lifetime then. Great, wonderful, wonderful. Like, as with all, that is so appropriately Chicago Bears. Just to bat your barf flies around a little bit here. That is so Chicago Bears that you cite something before I, in my 30s, was even born. Same. Like, Bears fans, you guys cling to that time way too much. I get it. It's probably the best time you had. I see Detroit Tigers fans do it all the time for the 84 World Series. I get it. But it's, you know what? Depeche Mode isn't on the charts anymore. I'm sorry.
Chris, the Lions have never won a Super Bowl, so get off that train.
Yeah. No. But I feel like, you want to know my hot take? This is for all sports. I think once your championship is over 10 years old, No one is allowed to claim it anymore. You know, we should just wipe record books clean after 10 years, because once it's gone by 10 years, it doesn't matter. No one who is responsible for it is around anymore. Mike Ditka isn't even on SportsCenter anymore. All right.
Spoken like a true millennial. Now, what's your favorite memory? Come on.
All right. Favorite memory. Okay. Once again, I have two answers for this. One is the self-deprecating answer. 2012 against the Houston Texans, where Jim Schwartz throws a flag he's not supposed to. The challenge of play he's not able to challenge, and he gets penalized for that. And that helps to set up the Houston Texans to win. And there is Gunther Cunningham, old gray head of the time of the National Football League. There's a great image of Gunther Cunningham drop kicking his playbook in frustration when that happened. However, my favorite positive memory is 2016, which is also one of my favorite seasons, because not because the Lions won at a decent pace. If I was going to say a winning season, I'd say 2014. 2016 was great because it was just a fascinating year. The Lions were always coming from behind. Games were exciting and interesting, even if the Lions didn't always win them. That was a Thanksgiving game against the Minnesota Vikings. And I believe, I have to correct myself, because that was a Darius Slay interception to set up the game-winning field goal. I was thinking about the Golden Tate game with the butt flip against Sendejo to win the game, but that was a little earlier. So I'm going to change it instead to 2015, last time I went to a Thanksgiving game, which was against the Eagles. The Lions season was pretty much lost, but the Eagles were worse. They were starting Mark Sanchez at the time. I think the Lions hung like 50-some on them. And it's my favorite memory because I just hung out with so many very, very, very drunk Philadelphia fans, including one who was playing with his nipples the entire game and just shouting and cheering at us. And then I met some far less intoxicated people who were for some reason from Toronto, but also Eagles fans. I don't know. My brother-in-law is a Eagles fan, so it's whatever. I have to kind of embrace it at this point. Ooh. But yeah, I mean, there's memories all over. But I'd say those are my two, is 2012 and 2015. Crazy fans and Gunther Cunningham drop kicking a playbook.
What an eclectic bunch of people, Chris. I want to thank you, first of all, for being on the show. Before we kick you out of here, can you tell our audience where they can find your work, listen to you, and interact with you? Because you were able to ruffle a little feathers today.
Clearly, I'm reading your chat right now, and people are going nuts. So, excuse me. I've been under the weather a little bit, so I'm kind of holding back my guts here. Find me on Twitter, at Chris Perfett, that is spelled P-E-R-F-E-T-T. Yelling at me off the bat, I'm probably not going to have a great time with you. I'll probably mute you there, but I welcome all followers. We'll have fun. Just again, recognize that I like to have fun. I like to joke, and I like to self-deprecate. And football isn't my only source of enjoyment on Twitter. I talk a lot of video games and anime and basketball. I'm a Pistons fan, probably more than I am a Lions fan. So we'll probably talk some of that if they're ever good, which is probably going to be never. I work over at Fox Sports Radio. You can find me on overnights on the weekends as a technical producer, which means I'm probably not speaking. But I do know that a friend of your show here at Bears Barroom, Jonas Knox, I am actually on his show. I'm his technical producer for the Jonas Knox Show on Fridays nights at, I believe, that would be Saturday mornings, 1 a.m. Central Time, I believe.
Nice. And before we let you go, we got to get a prediction on the game.
Oh, I'm sorry. I also have to get off the Pride of Detroit. I haven't even gotten to the Pride of Detroit stuff yet.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah. Ramble on, my friend.
Pride of Detroit. So my writing and the podcast, prideofdetroit.com, Pride of Detroit on Twitter, Pride of Detroit on Facebook. The PODcast is the most original name for a podcast out there, because Pride of Detroit's abbreviation is POD. And it's the first three letters of podcast, and it makes it very hard to search. But if you look for Pride of Detroit on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or iHeartRadio, you will find it there. We chop and screw it up every week. It is the Pride of Detroit PODcast, along with our preview podcast, In Season First Bite. It's me, my friend Jeremy Reisman, Ryan Matthews, a bunch of eclectic guests. We have fun. We play dumb games. We play a game called Why You Lion. We play Listcast, where we just rank stuff. We have fun there. And then I'm always writing over at prideofdetroit.com every now and then. You'll usually find me on there with a column when I have something interesting to say. And as always, just follow my main Twitter account. I'm starting to branch out and write in more places, too, and more than just football.
Excellent. A Renaissance man. Now give us a prediction for Thursday's game. What do you got?
Let's go with Lions pumpkin pie, Chicago Bears cranberry sauce.
We got the short end there.
No, I love cranberry sauce, but they're both winners. I would say this game is going to be pretty close. I think Chicago right now, for some reason, is a 3-point favorite on the road, which makes absolutely no sense to me. This game should almost be a pick 'em, to be honest. I think I give the game to Chicago in probably a 2-point edge. I don't know how they get to those 2 points, but I would say it's going to be very close. Mitchell Trubisky won't have a great day, but the Lions will shoot themselves in the foot more times than not. There will probably be a missed field goal, which will make Nagy go into another psychotic breakdown. It will definitely be, it's 38 is the total. And as a betting man, I like the under. Like the under. It's, 38's a low bid in today's NFL, but woof.
Yeah, I'd step on the branch and take the under on that, too. Chris Perfad, the host of the Pride of Detroit podcast. Chris, thank you so much for coming on and learned a lot about Detroit. Learned a lot about a lot of different things today. So we appreciate you being on. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you for being you. And as I say on the podcast, see you star side.
Take care, Chris.
All right.
All right, John, that means that we are ready for the second half of B55. I've got 5 questions for you. Are you ready?
I am ready. Let's do it.
That was an interesting interview with Chris.
Yeah. More of the one of the more lively ones we've had.
What lively ones? All right, John. Only 4 other NFL teams are averaging fewer points per drive than the Bears, and only 3 teams are averaging fewer yards per drive. Let me serve some more analytics for you. The Bears are among the highest scoring teams in the NFL in the third quarter and the lowest scoring teams in the first and fourth quarter. Now, take that slew of stats and try to make some sense of Matt Nagy's 2019 offense. You got 55 seconds.
Make sense of the offense? How the hell am I supposed to do that? What makes sense to me is that they can't ever get anything going out of the gate. It looks like they miss the bus every week and they don't show up until halftime. If you want me to be all sunshine and lollipops about it, I guess that means they are determining what is or isn't working and then they apply it in the second half. But then defenses, they catch on quickly and that momentum is short-lived and it's gone by the fourth quarter. I mean, I'm not sure we have to dig super deep into analytics to make a judgment about the Bears' offense. They're 29th in total offense and they hold company with teams that are competing for the number one overall pick. 269 yards of total offense per game. 269. I don't care if you have a burst in the third quarter or struggle in the first. The fact of the matter is, nothing's working offensively. It's downright laughable. Anyone who's taking solace in the Bears being a pretty good third quarter team is also downright laughable. Being competent 25% of the time probably doesn't yield good results in any situation. I don't want to hear about third quarter production.
I hear you. But it's interesting today that Trubisky was asked about, you know, what's going on with the third quarter. I think they're now up to like the second or third highest scoring team in third quarters. And he was asked, why is that happening? And he kind of mumbled a little bit and said, you know, we just have to be better prepared for the team because it looks like we're making better adjustments in the third quarter. And so, you know, when we're losing, you kind of read into everything that players say. Was he kind of taking a shot at Matt Nagy in preparation for games and having them prepared? I doubt it, but, you know, we're always kind of searching for answers with this incredibly disappointing season.
I know that when teams are losing, everybody likes to pull out a Zapruder film and try to figure out like who's on the grassy knoll and what's going on. But it could be just the fact that he has no idea why they're playing better in the third quarter. So he just said, we got to be better prepared for the first quarter. Yeah. So I think you might just go into that, you know, word soup of things you say at a press conference, and that's what comes out.
I hear you. All right, question number 2 here in our back half. Based on what we've learned about the Lions, we know that they're allowing about 120 rushing yards per game. Do you think the Bears can get a run game going against them? Or, given that the Lions have the third worst passing defense in the league, do you think Trubisky could mount his first 300 passing game this season? This defense for the Lions is bad, as you know, John. Tell us, are we going to light up the scoreboard on Thursday? 55 seconds and go.
light up the scoreboard. Let's see. This is the team that the Bears were able to beat a few weeks ago by a score of 20-13. The Bears have only scored 20 points four times this season. They lost two of them against the Raiders and the Saints. Trubisky did have three touchdown passes on November 10th, but accumulated only 173 yards and got sacked five times. Montgomery had 17 carries for a team-high 60 yards. I think the Bears can do enough to win on Thanksgiving, but why should I believe that on a short week going on the road to Detroit on Thanksgiving, which is never easy, why should I think that things are going to be way better than they were 3 weeks ago? I get that the Lions are somewhat tail-spinning, but the Bears are also on a sinking ship, and they're bailing water out with a Dixie cup as we speak. 300 yards for Mitch? I don't see it. 100 yards for Montgomery? Maybe, but I'd probably bet against it. Am I seeming too cynical? I'm sorry, but what beacon of hope have we had? What have we been granted this year that we think something's going to be completely different than it has been for the last 12 weeks?
Yeah, your cynicism, is that the best word I could use there? Is well-earned. My goodness.
I'm just blind optimism. I'm past that. I grew up Peter Pan. I'm done.
I hear you. All right. I've been asking the Barflies in the chat room which player they are most thankful for, given their level of play this season, this being Thanksgiving week. We've got comments like McBeerman saying Akeem Hicks when he's healthy, Cliff Wilson saying Roquan Smith, and Roquan's been playing well lately since he got over that issue that he, whatever that was. Swanky, I cut out Swanky's response. I think Swanky said that he wants to give a shout out to Anthony Miller and that he's hoping he can build off of that performance that he had last week. McReardon said Allen Robinson is a beast on offense. So, and Chubbs82 said that he's most thankful for the improvement of Nick Kwiatkowski. So I kind of like those. Who are you most thankful for this season? And we got double nickels on the clock. Go.
Pat O'Donnell, without a doubt. No, I'm kidding. But O'Donnell's had a solid year, other than the 13-yard whiff he had on Sunday. But thankful. I already gushed about Allen Robinson, so I won't do that again. But there is an old adage that you truly don't appreciate something until it's gone. And that's definitely the case this year. I'm very thankful for Hakeem Hicks. To understand what he meant to the defense and the team, just look at it whenever he isn't in the lineup. Now, obviously, the defense is still stout. But when he's in there, we saw an absolute elite defense. Remember when we were hooting and hollering after the Packers game, screaming about what regression? They have a better pass rush and, simply put, a better attitude as well when he's on the field. He's a leader. He's a guy filled with passion. And I think a lot of guys feed off his energy, potentially even Khalil Mack. So Hicks is a guy I've become more thankful for, and he isn't even playing right now. I saw a lot of Bears fans on Twitter this week saying they became more thankful for Jay Cutler after how things went down. I don't know if I'm ready to get on that train yet, but I saw that was something being talked about.
You know what's interesting is there's an article in The Athletic naming the all-decade team for this decade. And on the players they selected for the offensive line, the majority of them are on the present team. The present team. They got guys like Charles Leno, guys like Bobby Massey at the tackles. This is the all-decade team for the Bears. So when you look back at Jay Cutler's career, that was, to me, just a reminder of the pathetic offensive lines he had to play behind, and he never got the opportunity to play at the type of level that he could have potentially played had he had at least a B-level offensive line. And I think we're seeing the same with Mitch Trubisky. Not that, you know, Mitch Trubisky and Jay Cutler don't have their defects and imperfections, but when you don't give a quarterback a good offensive line, all of those imperfections are just going to look huge.
Yeah, and especially for a guy like Trubisky, where he needs time. He needs that because he's not at that elite level, and he may never be there, probably won't ever be there. But to help kind of erase some of those blemishes, you need to have some production out of the offensive line, and he's not getting that. So all of those, like you said, all those imperfections are being magnified now.
I am with you. All right, your prediction for the upcoming game is a little later. Right now, what I'd like to do is get kind of your gut feel for the Bears and how they're going to close this season. We got five games, a little over a quarter to go. We've got the Lions on Thursday, Cowboys, Packers, Chiefs, and Vikings. Now, I'm not necessarily asking for a win total, although feel free to share that if you'd like. What I'd like to know is if you think that the Bears can conclude these final five games in a way that will give us hope for a better 2020 season. You're on the clock.
I'll give you a total. I think the ceiling for this team is now 7-9. I think that's the best they can do. I think they can beat Detroit and maybe steal a game from Green Bay or maybe the Vikings in the last game of the year. You want to know what really bums me out the most? When the Bears ended up winning on Sunday, you know how I felt? I sat back and went, huh, that's good. I was borderline indifferent. Now, you might say that doesn't make me a true supporter of the team or whatever other tone-deaf crap you want to throw my way, but I've started looking at this team through an ultra-pragmatic lens. They barely beat the Giants, a 2-9 team with a bad defense and a rookie quarterback. How many teams would the Bears really have beaten last Sunday? Then I look at this from a win-losses standpoint. Does the win matter? I'm 99% sure it really doesn't. They have no room for error after the Lions game, and they have games with four playoff contenders. I don't really think about draft positioning either, because, well, they don't have a first rounder. This team has sucked all the joy out of this season so fast it has turned me callous. Internally, I let myself get excited about the 2019 Bears, and just like every other Bears squad for the last 30 years, they can't put together any kind of consistency. So looking forward to 2020, the only thing that they have going for them is that they're coming off a losing season, which usually bodes well for them.
I'm with you. I am with you 100%. We're running a little long, so I'm going to go quickly to our final question, and we turn off the clock, so please take as long as you want. You've elected to forego the Buffon boost for the rest of the season for good reason.
Yeah.
Well, we're the only ones that need a Buffon boost, and you're getting tired of trying to cheer us up, I know.
Yeah.
So my final question for you is better suited perhaps for this time of the season. What do we as Bears fans have to be thankful for? The clock is off. John, take it away.
Well, that's a tall order. The Bears are going to miss the playoffs. The offense has the efficiency of a wind-powered tank, and no one knows who's even going to be there in 2020. So what do I have to be thankful for? Honestly, I'm thankful for the Bears fan base. For a forgettable team like the 2019 Bears, Bears fans are still heavily invested. Now, they might have changed their tune from Super Bowl bound to burn it all down, but they're still here. They might be booing, but they're still there. They may be angrily disagreeing with people on social media, but that doesn't happen unless you're still passionate about the Chicago Bears. No matter how low this team might sink, you are all still here, listening to this podcast, interacting with other fans around the world, and you're still watching the games. So I'm thankful that you're here, because this show is just as much for me as it is for you. So thank you for your support of this show, and thank you for your support of the Chicago Bears. All right, every week I give you my prediction to the game. I'm happy to say that I was correct last week. This week, well, I said that the Bears were going to split with the Lions this year, but I did not anticipate getting two cracks at Jeff Driskel. I think the Bears once again pull out a gritty, tough win over the mighty Detroit Lions, 16-13. I want to thank Chris Perfett, the host of the Pride of Detroit podcast, for being our guest tonight. Remember to follow me on Twitter at JDBuffon. Make sure you are following the Barroom on Twitter at Bears Barroom, and visit the Facebook page. Aldo, go ahead and tell us what's on dock for the rest of the night.
Well, John, how's your fantasy team doing this year?
Oh, pretty good, because I listened to our programming.
There you go. Fantasy Football Goon is coming right up right here on our Mixler.com channel. And make sure you also tune in to Shy Fans in the Stands. Bears beat writer Zach Pearson will join Greg Braggs and Joy Two Scoops Mandel. Those shows, like all of our shows, are available on podcast format. So make sure you go to iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get podcasts, and just search for Bears Ballroom Radio Network. Subscribe to us. Give us a good review. That would be great. And John, why don't you close out the show?
That's right. Sign up to our Mixler.com channel for email updates on all of our live shows. We would love to see you in the chat room interacting with us, giving us crap all night. We love that. It's absolutely free to sign up for. We hope you join us and interact. If you listen to the podcast version of this, please leave us a review. As Aldo said, that helps us out immensely. But that will do it for us tonight. Thank you for tuning in. Enjoy the game, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Hey, it's Aldo. John and I are going to talk a little bit more football right after this message.
What's up, Barflies? It's your boy, Bobby Bombs, introducing to you the new partnership for the Barfly Tailgate Show with the one and only ball girl, Jamie Dragani. Jamie is a very talented artist who creates custom sports balls and equipment for basically every sporting event that has a ball. She handcrafts these personalized masterpieces as team keepsakes to memorialize a great season, or even as an individual award to be given out by the schools, coaches, and parents to their athletes. Jamie has teamed up with Ryan Badgley and will be creating some custom footballs with players' name and charitable organization for that ever so special segment you guys know and love called Badge of Honor. This will be our way at the Barfly Tailgate Show and Bears Barroom to say thank you for what our Bears players do off the field. All you parents out there with high school athletes who are graduating, there's no better way to honor your child's high school sporting career than with a ball to commemorate their achievements. You guys can find Jamie on Twitter at @the_ball_girl. Please give her a follow. Check out her website, theballgirl.com, to see the full array of all of her products and services she provides. We look forward to this partnership and can't wait for you guys to see how talented she is. Bear down.
You know you got to feel it. You got to feel it.
Good show, John.
Yeah. I mean, got interesting content.
Chris is an unusual guy.
We've had some unique guys on this year.
We have, and we pride ourselves on having a diverse collection of guests for your show and the other shows on the network. And Chris definitely fit in when we talk about diversity as a strange sense of humor, but funny. I laughed a lot and an unusual take on his Lions.
Yeah, you know, taking some jabs at Bears fans, it's all in good fun.
Absolutely. And
we gave some back. But I think that's whenever you have two franchises that are as disoriented as the Lions and Bears, you really have what can you do? Right. you can take shots at the other team, but you have to realize that they're going to be throwing bombs back at you because we don't really have a lot of legs to stand on.
Yep, indeed. Have you already started thinking about 2020, or are you still kind of living in the moment and living week to week with these Bears?
No, I'm way in 2020. Like I said before, I don't want to say that I don't care about the games because I do, and I watch them, and I watch every snap of them. I'm very invested in watching the games, but I'm already thinking about what the team is going to look like in 2020. What is the roster going to look like? What's the coaching staff going to look like? I mean, I don't think Nagy's going to get the axe, but I think that there could be some cuts along his staff. I think that you might see a new offensive line coach at some point. I think that you might see a shakeup on a couple different fronts there. So what's the staff going to look like? What's the personnel going to look like? Are they going to go out and get some more linemen? Are they going to get another pass rusher? What's the quarterback position going to look like? I know Mitch is probably going to be on the roster, but are they going to bring in a guy to compete with him? Are they going to draft somebody like him? So my mind's already spinning on what 2020 is going to look like because 2019 has been an absolute dumpster fire.
Yeah, it's hard not to go there. I still, my philosophy is to try to live in the moment, but heck, I can't help but think about, you know, with these 2 second round draft picks, can a quality quarterback, one of the quarterbacks that I like, fall to the second round? Can, you know, there be a free agent quarterback acquisition that could at the very least come in and compete with Mitch Trubisky? Because to me, it does look like with $7 million owed to Trubisky next season and Ryan Pace's heavy investment in him, not only with that salary but also with trading up for him, that he's going to give him every opportunity to come back next season and win this job. Do you think there's anything that Mitch can do over these last five games, though, that could get you to a point where you would say, well, okay, maybe offseason quarterback isn't that high a priority?
I mean, short of just, you know, setting the league on fire, because, you know, they got to play, they're playing quality teams, but you know, the Chiefs don't have a great defense. The Cowboys have an all right defense. So, I mean, short of just, you know, lighting up the stat book, and then, but that would also mean that they would end up being 9-7, 10-6. So, I mean, that would paint a completely different picture. And I don't see this offense doing that. So you also got to think about if Mitch is owed that money, how much you going to pay that free agent acquisition? A guy like Cam Newton who said that he'd be open to coming to Chicago, or at least that's what the reports were. How much are you going to wrap up into the quarterback position, knowing that you got a lot of money in other places? Can you afford to do that? So I don't know if the idea is to. I think that they will bring somebody in to compete with Mitch. I think Chase Daniel's gone. Chase Daniel's gone, but. How much money can you really wrap into it? Do you give a quarterback's not going to take a 1-year deal. So do you do like a Mike Glennon thing, but then who are you signing for that kind of money and that kind of contract? Can you bring over an Andy Dalton for that kind of thing? I'm trying to think of other guys. I mean, do you bring in a Mariota for that kind of thing? And are those actually long-term solutions? Are we just looking for the next Band-Aid? So there's a lot of things that need answered, and they are not easy questions. And there are a lot of wrong answers that can – there's a lot of wrong solutions they can have for this. So it's going to be interesting to see what route they go.
Yeah, do you think that Ryan Pace's job kind of hinges on Trubisky's success, given that, you know, if Trubisky, like you, the picture you point out is a valid one. I mean, if you elect not to bring back Leonard Floyd, who I think is owed some $13, $14 million on that fifth year option, so if you cut him before June 1st, you can save that money, and then you could turn that money over to a 1 year rental of a veteran, or figure out a way to get a veteran for a 2 or 3 year deal. So you're losing your outside linebacker, and you're bringing in a guy like, you know, I don't know, Mariota or Teddy Bridgewater. I doubt that Teddy Bridgewater would come over for that kind of money. But my question is, you know, if Trubisky fails the rest of this year and next year, then that's goodbye Ryan Pace, right?
Yeah, I always thought that, you know, the legacy of Ryan Pace, and for that matter, Matt Nagy, was going to be tied to Mitchell Trubisky's progression, and whether or not he succeeds kind of is like whether or not they succeed. Now, I remember I remember reading about, you know, how when Brett Favre was traded to Green Bay, they basically acknowledged that they are acquiring Brett Favre, they're going to make it work, or they're all going to be out of the job. And they made it work. So obviously they looked smart. They knew what they were getting. They made it work there. But I think that can also have the exact opposite effect, where if you're fully invested on this guy and they put a lot of assets around this guy to try to make it work, especially last year, you bring in Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, Trey Burton, you're drafting pieces, you're drafting Anthony Miller, you're trying to give this guy all the opportunities in the world to succeed. You can't just keep saying, well, you know, everyone else is letting him down. You know, eventually, you know, you gotta be able to win when your line isn't great. Eventually, you're gonna have to win despite not having the best weapons at wide receiver or tight end. If you're a truly franchise quarterback, how many have we seen overcome? Now, I'm not going to say that he's going to be Tom Brady, but look at what Tom Brady's had to work with throughout the, even into his late 30s and early 40s. You look at some of these better quarterbacks, they are able to overcome and erase some of the imperfections on the offense. Trubisky's never going to be that guy. He needs to be in the right position to be successful. And I don't know if they're 1 or 2 years away from having that situation for him. So I don't think that you can just wait around and be like, once we get the right system in 2 or 3 years, then Trubisky's going to be fine. Well, your defense is going to be a lot older, and you're going to have a lot of different faces on it as well.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I'm literally praying that Mitch can turn things around and become that quarterback, because if he doesn't, then I don't see how the Bears get out of this mess for at least 2 or 3 years. I think it's that dire right now.
Well, that's the thing. Now, do you go – because we were talking about who you're going to bring in. Is Mariota, is that a long-term guy, a guy who can't start over Ryan Tannehill? Is Andy Dalton, the guy who got benched for Ryan Lindley, going to be – or whoever the hell they got playing quarterback in Cincinnati, is that the guy you think is going to do it? Now, I said this before – there were points in this season early on, week 3, 4, and 5, that early, you know, first, second quarter of the season, where if they would have had a competent quarterback who knew the system and would actually go through the progressions, a couple of those games they might win. If you have Andy Dalton playing, or, you know, we talked about Alex Smith. If Alex Smith is willing to come back, is that a guy that you can plug in for 2 years while you may to see what you got there? So there were points in this season where you're like, well, if they had a different quarterback in there, they'd probably win that game. I don't know if that's going to be true the whole way through, especially in 2020. You're going to have shakeups regardless. You're going to lose guys. You're going to sign guys. So I just don't know. Like you said, this could be another regroup 2 to 3 years. In 2 to 3 years, that defense is not going to be the same, and you just wasted another window of being a consistent competitor.
Sage Rosenfels, who I believe he's over at CBS, and he does a show with the Score Sports Radio here in Chicago. He does a Monday segment with them. He tweeted out today that the problems with the offensive with the offense for the Chicago Bears are, number one, offensive coaching, head coach. Number two, offensive line players and coaching. And number three, Mitch Trubisky. Mitch hasn't been great, but the coaching makes him much worse than he is. I watch the coaches film every week. They just run plays. And Draft Dr. Phil has been saying that even since last year when the Bears were winning and Nagy won the Coach of the Year. And I actually got angry with Phil saying, you know, he's a first-year coach, you know, let him, he's learning on the job and so forth. But clearly what's happened this season is that Nagy is still kind of running the same things he ran last year, and defensive coordinator says, oh, this is easy to figure out, you know. And then when you get guys not playing to their level of expectations on the offensive line, and then you get Mitch Trubisky with his inexperience and his lack of confidence, this is what we got. We got a bad situation.
Well, yeah, and we've talked about this before. There are coaches that can adapt and see what they got, and they make their system according to the personnel. And then there are players, and then there's coaches that have a system, and you're going to run that system because it's a tried and true method. And I don't care what your skill set is. The system will take us to where we need to go. It's not the personnel. And so what we continuously see is Matt Nagy's going to run his offense, and it doesn't matter who's in there. They're going to run that play, and it's going to be successful because that's the system he's come up with. And I'm not saying necessarily. Necessarily, that's a terrible way of going about it, but for this particular situation, it's not great. You run 2 weeks ago, you're on a third and one. You have a quarterback who apparently doesn't have a very good hip at that point, and you're running an option. So, I mean, is that a lack of awareness? Is that inexperience still with Matt Nagy, who only has, you know, a year and, you know, 13 or 12 weeks under his belt as a head coach, still not adapting well? Or is it going to be like this for the rest of his tenure there, where this is the system, run it or leave, or you run it the way it is or it's going to fall apart? So that's a little disconcerting, thinking that unless he has the exact right personnel for that system, this is what we're going to get. Because I think that he has a lot of confidence in the system he's running, and he should. It had success last year. But if you don't have the right guys, this is what you're going to get, and I don't want this for another season.
Yeah, I hear you. Now, you're going to be doing some hunting over the Thanksgiving Day weekend. If the Bears lose miserably on Thanksgiving, do your fellow hunters have to be careful?
Well, luckily, hunting is my therapy time. It's nice and quiet out in the woods. Nice. I can collect my thoughts, and I can luckily, where my parents are, I'm going to my parents' place out in Western PA, and there's not a lot of cell phone service there, so I can be completely off the grid. I can kind of just let myself be by myself with nothing really pulling me back. So if the Bears were to lose to the Lions on Thanksgiving, I'll probably eat my body weight in food, and then I'll go lay in the woods for a little bit, and maybe a deer comes by, maybe it doesn't. But it's never been about, it's never been about the killing of the animals. It's always been about being out there and enjoying the seclusion, if you will, basically being off the grid as much as you can. So that if the Bears do lose, I'll be able to unwind a little bit.
Well, it sounds to me like if you're going to follow your plans, win or lose, you're going to have a great, great time.
That's right. And that's whenever you're a Bears fan, you got to be able to find an outlet for happiness, because they're never going to love you as much as you love them.
There you go. All right, John, I want you and your family have a great Thanksgiving, and thanks for all you do for the Bar Room, brother.
Hey, thanks. Same to you, Aldo, and to all the Barflies.
All right, and listen, if you're listening, get well. I'm not good at this stuff.
He's all right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Hello, everyone. My name is Alec Lifshitz, a.k.a. Trey Busy, and I'm here to have a conversation with you guys about mental health. A lot of times in our communities, we don't talk about mental health enough, and it goes under the radar as a reoccurring issue. So I took the liberty to create the Let's Talk It Out podcast. This podcast was created to break the silence on mental health issues and to give a voice to those suffering. I have conversations with professionals in the mental health field as well as those who are suffering, and we break down different ways to stump stigmas and ways to cope with mental health conditions. The show is broadcasted live every Thursday at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time on Mixlr.com/LTIO podcast. That's MIXLR.com/LTIO podcast. If you can't make the live recording of the podcast, then you can find the podcast available to you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Give the podcast a follow on Twitter and Instagram at LTI Podcast on both platforms. Thank you, and I look forward to talking to you guys in the future.